Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday, christened on Tuesday, married on Wednesday, took ill on Thursday, worse on Friday, died on Saturday, buried on Sunday. This is the end of Solomon Grundy.
The author of that rhyme is Mother Goose, but it could be you. WSSR Radio, Sangamon State University, brings you Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about the process of writing creatively. To conduct today's program, here's children's author, Jacqueline Jackson.
In Mother Goose, everything in life is taken for granted and talked about. Love, fear, sex, fun, hate, and also death. Death has always been a part of life. In ancient days, life was short, sharp, violent. People died. It has not been very long since mothers often died in childbirth. Go look at any old cemetery and read the tombstones and notice the young mothers that are buried side by side with their infant. Children also frequently died. John Donne, the poet, had numerous children, 8, 10, 12. They all died before they grew up, except one or two. By the sorts of childhood diseases that are now controlled by a shot, TB, diabetes, polio, pneumonia, diphtheria, measles. My mother tells me that when she was a little girl, a friend of hers was dying of diabetes, and how they would tiptoe softly past the house and see the drawn shades. That little girl, now, would not die. She would have the insulin shots. Death was a part of life, and children's books included death. In fact, they often dwelt on death to the exclusion of almost anything else. Take, for instance, the New England Primer that the little Puritan children read and learned their lessons on. X was Xerxes the Great did die, and so must you and I. There was an account of the burning of John Rogers at the stake, whose crime was assisting in translating the Bible into English, and the picture shows him being watched by 10 or 11 of his children, including a baby in arms. And after this episode, there is a poem. I in the burying place may see graves shorter there than I. From death's arrest, no age is free. Young children, too, must die. Books for children were so filled with death that when a magazine for children was begun in 1827, that's almost 150 years ago, called The Youth's Companion, one of its editorial policies was to exile death from its pages. The Youth's Companion ran until 1929, and it did exile death from its pages. This sentiment, though, wasn't the prevailing one when it began. In 1828, there's a little book called The Affectionate Parent's Gift and the Good Children's Reward, and long narrative poems in this little book contained a visit to the lunatic asylum, a visit to the prison, as well as the death of a father and the death of a mother. A children's book of 1818 has for fare to read the kiddies a story called The Funeral, which tells about the kind and loving mother of these two children, the ones pictured in the engraving following a coffin. The kind and loving mother of these two children is dead and going to the grave, and the message to the readers is that it's too late for these little children to do all they could for her, and so you, little reader, before this sorrowful day comes, you cherish your mother, or else it will be too late to do anything for her but to cry bitterly over her grave. As late as 1895, I have a book called Touching Incidents and Answers to Prayer, for children, and all the stories are about the brave and noble deaths of little children. But with the 1900s, the feeling had begun to take hold that children should have happy books, that death should be banished from the pages. And the pendulum swung so completely the other way that death was indeed banished from the pages of almost every book. The fairy tales were retold so that Little Red Riding Hood didn't get eaten by the wolf, or Grandma either. And even the wolf ran off into the woods and did not suffer death. Mother Goose had a version that came out in 1950, that's 22 years ago, called The Happy Mother Goose, where Solomon Grundy didn't get sick at all and die. But like the old woman under the hill, if he's not gone, he's living there still. Death was considered a subject unfit for children to handle, unfit for children to face. Not only books, but our modern life did this to us. People used to die at home. Now they go and die in the hospital. They go to funeral homes instead of being laid out in people's homes at wakes where friends and relatives could come and could mourn and could give each other mutual support. Now the dead are made to look as if they are living, and everyone stands around and says, how natural they look. Usually children are not taken to the funeral homes to see the dead person. We forget to be human about it, and this does terrible things to people, to children. You know about death. You're probably afraid of death. You don't want to die, to have your parents die. You want to talk about death, to understand death, and yet it is something that grown-ups are often afraid to talk about and think that children shouldn't. There are extreme cases. I have a friend whose mother died when she was 7 or 8. One day the mother was there, the next day she was gone. Nobody, and I repeat, nobody, not father, aunts, uncles, clergymen, ever told her what had happened to her mother. Her mother had simply vanished. I cannot begin to tell you the terrible things that this silence did to Gracie. However, the pendulum in children's books, and I think in life itself, is swinging back now, not to extreme dwelling on death, but including it as a part of life that children know and that children shouldn't be shielded from. There's a book by Jean Little called Home from Far, where Jenny's twin brother Michael died in an automobile accident. Many of you have probably read Charlotte's Web and have wept over the death of Charlotte alone there in the abandoned pig booth at the fair. There is a new book out called Annie and the Old One by Miska Miles. Annie is a little Navajo girl, and her grandmother says, my children, when the new rug is taken from the loom, I will go to Mother Earth. Annie is troubled. She loves her grandmother very much, and she says later to her mother, how can my grandmother know she will go to Mother Earth when the rug is taken from the loom? Many of the old ones know, her mother said. How do they know? Your grandmother is one of those who live in harmony with all nature, with earth, coyote, birds in the sky. They know more than many will ever learn. Those old ones know. But Annie can't accept that when the rug is finished that her grandmother will die, and so she does everything she can to keep the rug from being finished. She is naughty so that her mother will come to school and lose a day of weaving. She lets the sheep out so that there will be searchings for the sheep instead of working on the rug. And finally, she sneaks in the night and unweaves the day's weaving of the rug itself to postpone the day that the rug will be done. And when she does this, her grandmother understands why it is that Annie is behaving so peculiarly. And she goes for a walk with Annie. The old one sat crossing her knees, folding her gnarled fingers in her lap. Annie knelt beside her. The old one looked far off toward the rim of desert where sky met sand. My granddaughter, she said, you have tried to hold back time. This cannot be done. The desert stretched yellow and brown away to the edge of the morning sky. The sun comes up from the edge of earth in the morning. It returns to the edge of earth in the evening. Earth, from which good things come for the living creatures on it. Earth, to which all creatures finally go. Annie picked up a handful of brown sand and pressed it against the palm of her hand. Slowly she let it fall to earth. She understood many things. The sun rose, but it also set. The cactus did not bloom forever. Petals dried and fell to earth. She knew she was a part of the earth and the things on it. She would always be a part of the earth, just as her grandmother had always been, just as her grandmother would always be, always and forever. And after that, Annie does not hold up the weaving of the rug anymore, but assists in weaving the rug. Josette, a young friend of ours, when she heard that our dog had died, wrote, "Dear Jacksons, how did Noodle die? Did she have a heart attack, or did she have a sickness, or did she have a cold? But how did she die? Where did you put she when she was die? Did you put her in your yard? And thank you for the Valentine. Love, Josette." A year later, she had another letter to write. "Dear Jacksons, this is going to be sad. Monday, when we came back from New York, we went to the vet's to pick up Putsy, and then the vets told Daddy that Putsy was lying on her side, and when he touched her, she was dead. Then we were sad." Some of you have written about death. Molly wrote about Tad. "When I was a little girl, I had a dog named Tad. He was a brown dog. He was very small. I loved Tad, and I always played with him. He seemed like one of the family. Every Christmas, we gave him presents." And she tells many things about Tad and then how he was hit by a car. "I cried. We took him to the vet. He died there and is buried under an apple tree. Now I miss him." Martha wrote in about Benjamin. "Benjamin, my brother's dog, was hit by a car on Friday, October 9, 1970. My brother heard him yipping. He came outside, found him, and took him to the vet. Benjamin was bleeding internally, so the vet suggested putting him to sleep. Now there is not a Benjamin Lovett." Today, let's not swim away from death. It helps to know that we can talk about it, to write about it, to put down our feelings and our grievings, and know that someone else will say, "Yes, death is a great mystery. I have wept too. I know how you feel." But it is part of life, and together we can have the strength to face it. So write down, if you will, your own thoughts about death and dying. Did your turtle die? How did you feel when your cat was hit by a car? Or your dog? Perhaps you had to take him to the vet to be put to sleep because he was too old, or because he was biting people. Like I had to take our favorite dog, and he leaned against me the whole way and was so trusting. And how about people dying, people you love? Did others help you bear the grief? Some of you have written in, "Misery is when your grandfather dies." How have you felt when people have tried to shield you from death and pretend that it didn't happen? Were you angry, bewildered, frustrated? All that, together with the grief, is a pretty hard burden to bear. Or what about people that you didn't love enough, or that you thought you didn't? Someone wrote in, "Misery is when your worst sister dies, even if you never liked her." It's natural to have angry feelings against people, to have angers against sisters, brothers, mothers, fathers. And then, when they die, we often feel guilty. We didn't love them enough. Has anyone helped you bear that sort of guilt? Yes, there's misery in death, but also, perhaps, there is beauty and hope. It can certainly draw us closer to the living. So don't be afraid to write your feelings out about death. How did your noodle die?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Please send in your writings. Send them to Jacqueline Jackson, WSSR Radio, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.